ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Sean Mapes behind the glass. It is a Taco Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Apparently, we've all been on ESPN 92.5 a little bit today.
Yeah, you were.
How about the offense for the Houston Astros yesterday? The bats exploding, scoring 9 runs overall. The big first inning, 7 runs on pretty good pitcher that they scored those 7 runs on against Kevin Gausman. Astros got to him, lit him up. Fun to see a little offensive explosion at Minute Maid Park.
I think it was just what the doctor ordered. Everybody getting a little restless and you know, from series to series now. Are you worried yet? Are you panicked? This is what you expect out of the Houston Astros. And a night like this, getting a pitcher that I don't believe had given up an earned run prior to that start last night, that was really, really good in Gausman. They got to him early. They got to him often. They put a crooked number that was a large one on the board and sent a message right away that, hey, this isn't the way we're going to play all year, and we are going to right this ship. And it was encouraging to see. We've talked about Jake Meyers, and for him to go opposite field and get, you know, a big home run that was much needed for him and for the team. And we talked about Abreu. The guys that we were questioning were the guys that came up early and did things to kind of open the floodgates that really allowed Javier to kind of – he didn't have his best stuff, but he could settle in and just throw strikes and realize that, you know, this was a game that they were going to put in their back pocket to set him off on the right – path for this series against the Blue Jays. It was a big win at the right time for this team.
Somewhere in the middle of the game, early part of the game, even after the Astros had scored the 7 runs, it was they were showing the numbers of Kyle Tucker's walks. Kyle Tucker's walked a ton this year, and we know that Dusty's used Kyle Tucker for the most part when Yordan doesn't have a day off behind Yordan, behind Abreu. It's usually been Yordan 3-hole, Abreu 4-hole. Kyle Tucker has been the fifth hitter of this lineup. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, man, no one wants to pitch Kyle Tucker. Like, no one wants to face him in critical spots. He's had guys on deck in over the course of the season of, like, David Hensley. Jeremy Pena's hit behind him a lot, hit behind him yesterday. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, the Astros need to figure out a way to get Kyle Tucker a little bit of protection because no one wants to face Kyle Tucker. They much rather just pitch around Kyle Tucker, face the next guy in the lineup, and then all of a sudden Corey Jolks hits a bomb out to left center field. He doubles later in the game. You look at his line score or his batting average whenever, you know, they update at the end of the day. Corey Jolks hitting over 300 for the Houston Astros, and I have a revelation. It's like, hey, while Michael Brantley is out, Corey Jolks should be the nearly everyday left field DH wherever Yordan Alvarez is not playing that day.
When he's in the lineup, they have 9 wins now.
Really?
So
Corey Jolks is a
Corey Jolks is a guy that, as much as Dusty likes to experiment with young guys and putting guys, you know, to give them a chance and an opportunity, he also plays trends, and that trend is up for Corey Jolks. And until something happens to where, and I think he actually probably likes him more than he likes Chaz with the way that he treats Chaz, but if you can see that those things are trending in the right direction when he's in the lineup, put him in the lineup. I mean, this team needs a spark, obviously. It was really struggling and scuffling, and when you hear a Bregman, a leader on the team, come out and say, hey, look, we need to work on cleaning some stuff up. We know we've got to be better. That's all you need to hear to realize something needs to change and get this team going. Yeah, it helped that you had an offensive explosion last night, but why? Jolks is in the middle of all of that. Don't take him out of the lineup.
No, and Dusty still is going to try to play his guys. Like, he's still going to give David Hensley some starts. He was talking about that in the postgame show, the postgame as well, the postgame interview session with the media, where they were like, "Hey, you know, these guys are not playing every day, but you're getting some, you know, production from these guys that aren't playing every single day." And Dusty got a little defensive about it. It's like, "Well, I'm getting these guys tons of at bats. They need at bats. They have to be able to be fresh. I need to give these guys some looks." To me, you got to play the hot hand. Like, Hensley's hitting under 200. Yiner Diaz right now, it doesn't seem like he's going to DH many games. He's going to start maybe 2 out of every 5 games that Martin Maldonado does not. And I'm not saying that this is permanent. I'm not saying that this is forever. It can't be because Michael Brantley's supposed to come back in May. But as long as Corey Jolks is continuing to produce, I don't want to see David Hensley get DH spots. I don't want to see Yiner Diaz get a DH start. If Corey Jolks is producing and Corey Jolks is hitting above 300 and Corey Jolks is getting extra base hits and he's giving you some protection in the middle of the lineup for Kyle Tucker and Jeremy Pena-ish, ride Corey Jolks until the well runs dry.
No question. There's no reason not to. I mean, again, because you're not with all of your regular starters and you're looking for guys to kind of fill the void and bridge the gap. If he's not only bridging the gap, it's like when Dubon starts hitting. Well, then there's even more. There's a really legit reason to keep him in the lineup, because if he's hot and he's hitting and he's doing Altuve-type things at the plate, keep him in the lineup, because you're struggling to find enough offense to keep innings going and to keep, you know, other teams fearing what the meat of this lineup can do when they don't have to be pitched around. I just think that it's common sense baseball at this point.
Keep Corey Jolks in the lineup, Dusty. But whatever you do, we trust it. We've always said that.
No, you do.
How about Jake Meyers going a little oppo taco for a three-run shot? I was beginning to think that Jake Meyers couldn't hit home runs anymore. I think Jake Meyers was believing he couldn't hit home runs anymore based on the reaction that he had after he hit said home run in that first inning, that three-run shot. Does it boost your confidence level at all in Jake Meyers that he was able to go deep, that he had a couple of hits, had a couple of walks on Sunday? Are you getting any optimism at all with Jake Meyers after a big game yesterday?
There's a difference in the two. Does it change my feeling on Jake Meyers because of one game? No. Do I think that this hopefully is, a spark, a positive move in the right direction that maybe mentally he can settle down a little bit and try to get back to where he was? Sure. I think that, you know, every player looks for that positive, that kind of building block that they can grab onto and go, I can still do this. And I know that I'm capable. Because I think you're right. I think we've talked about all the mental blocks he's going through. And one of them was, I think he lost his self-confidence along the way. And there was a lot of doubt that you could see in his eyes when he was at the plate. You know, he put bat to ball last night. He did some things that we saw when he first got called up that make you believe, hey, let's hope this is the start of him figuring things out to find where he once was. And that's what you can hold out hope for. But if Chaz figures out whatever the heck's going on with his eyes quickly, there's another guy that was red hot until he was forced out by whatever's going on, not by his own doing, that deserves to be back in there. Because even with a big lead, Jake Meyers made mistakes in the outfield last night. And it's not just his throwing. It's like when you know that you catch a ball in the outfield, and you've got runners at first and second that are tagging, don't try to make the long throw to get the guy at third. Avoid the big inning and hit the cutoff or throw it to second base and prevent two guys in scoring position. It's just common sense baseball. And those are the things that you think that Jake has already figured out. But I think along the way, when everything's going through his head, everything kind of goes out the window.
That was a stupid play.
It was.
That's something that should cost him a little bit of money in kangaroo court, to be quite honest. That was not a heads-up play. Still the better defender than Chaz McCormick, at least in terms of range. Dusty Baker tells you that every single time they're both in the outfield, because Jake's the one that plays center, Chaz is the one that plays left field. So Dusty's telling you that he thinks Jake Meyers is a better defensive center fielder than Chaz McCormick. Hopefully Chaz gets this eye thing figured out. The way that I look at Jake Meyers, like prospects as the Astros dude in center field, it's kind of like a door, right? Like whenever you're no longer confident in a guy, you're slamming that door shut. Whenever he first came up to the team and he produced really well before he hurt his labrum in the White Sox series in the playoffs, the door was wide open. Like no one was having conversations of Chaz McCormick being the everyday future of the position. It was Jake Meyers. Jake Meyers is looking good as a rookie. He's playing well. The future of center field belongs to Jake Meyers. That door's wide open. Then he hurts the labrum. You're like, okay, well, we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, come back from the injury, and was dreadful. He was awful last year. Wasn't very good. So we've closed that door almost all the way. In the offseason, it's like, okay, you know, he's had an offseason. He's recovered from the injury. That door was still kind of open. The door was open a little bit. Dusty ran him out in center field for the first two games of the year. He was hitting lousy. And that door, I think most people in Houston probably slammed it shut.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably shutting it as well, too, to be completely honest with you. So Jake Meyers yesterday, I think he opened the door slightly. Like, there's a crack.
Fine.
There's a crack in the door. It's not wide open, but there's a crack in the door with hope with Jake Meyers again.
See, to me, because it was understandable that he was going through some mental issues in the outfield, mm-hmm. because of what he went through with the shoulder and with both running into the warning track and the wall and also diving for balls. But when you saw that he looked like a deer in the headlights at home plate when he had a bat in his hand, that changed everything. Because now, really, he becomes basically kind of useless for you until he figures that stuff out. Went back to AAA. I thought they were going to shut him down. Instead, he really caught fire in AAA, came back up, was a part of the playoff run. Now that he's been back, I don't agree with Dusty Baker at all. And that's why I'm glad you clarified it and said in Dusty's mind. Chaz made plays in the outfield in the playoffs, including one of the greatest catches in the history of this team, to show you that range or no range or whatever you want to try and criticize Chaz, he's a gamer. And he makes plays. And he makes big plays. And then when he came and stepped up at the plate even more, that kind of pushed Jake down even further because it's like now the guy's a better stick than you. And maybe he doesn't have as much range, but he's not afraid to, and he has the confidence to go ahead and do the things you need a center fielder to do, to where he's earned those reps to be that guy. And so Dusty may feel a certain way, but I think that the trained eye watching baseball says Chess is a far better player at this point. That's why Jake needed this more than the Astros did, but along the way, it obviously helped the Astros last night.
Yeah, I don't really disagree with any of that, to be completely honest with you. Even whenever I'm saying that Jake has kind of like cracked that door open again, I don't think it should be at the expense of Chaz McCormick playing less.
It just means you have a deeper team, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and look, probably, I mean, who knows how long this Chaz thing's going to go on. Blurry vision. He's not on the IL yet, so it makes you think that he's probably close to coming back. Dusty Baker got a little snappy with the media yesterday in the dugout. Like, listen, man, I'm not a doctor. Like, telling the media he's not a doctor doesn't know if Chaz is going to go on the injured list or not. So we'll see how it all plays out. I tend to think that he's close to being back because if he didn't land on the IL yet, tells you that he's probably close to being back. Dusty also said he might use him as a pinch runner yesterday. So, like, he was available yesterday, not to hit, but he was available to pinch run. So something tells me he's probably closer to return than not. But good to give that little benefit or at least the little slight hope that maybe we can't completely slam the door shut on Jake Meyers yet. Or you slamming the door shut on Jake Meyers. If you opened it slightly after a two-hit game yesterday in which he homered a little Oppo Taco from Jake Meyers. And how about Corey Jolk? Should he be the everyday left fielder DH wherever Yordan doesn't want to play that day until Michael Brantley comes back? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776 on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. How about the pitching side of things yesterday for the Astros? I noticed a promising sign from Christian Javier. And one Astro reliever is proving us all very, very wrong. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. I've been singing his praises for quite a while. Doc Linville is a game changer because he gets you your hair back. If you have thinning or balding spots and you think there's absolutely no way you're ever going to get it back and all you're going to have to do is resort to sprays and creams and foams that just cover up the problem but never really rectify it, that's not true because of Doc Linville and his staff and the NeoGraft procedure. It's simply put, taking hair where you're never going to lose it, sides and back, genetically is never going to go away no matter how bald you are on top, and taking some of that and moving it where you need it most. A lot of times it's your hairline in front. Sometimes it's up on top in the back. Regardless of where you need it, they can move it. They can get it where you need it to be, and it can give you a whole new confidence boost and a very positive feeling about your appearance again. It's fantastic. As listeners to ESPN 97.5, it's even better because you can have a consultation with Doc Linville and his staff to figure out if the NeoGraft is right for you for absolutely free. Most people, it costs $150. Because you listen to us, all you need to do is go to 975hair.com, sign up for an appointment, ask all the questions, get all the answers, see if it's right for you, but no, there's no obligation and no payment out of your wallet just to meet with them to figure out if you can get this procedure done as well. I did it. Granato did it. We love it. We love Doc Linville, and we believe in him. You will, too. Check him out today. Go to 975hair.com.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Kickback Next Door on Twitter says, door closed on Jake Meyers. Jolks needs to be plugged in as much as possible. Two things that are not the same conversation, different conversation, because Jake's your center fielder. Jolks can probably play a little bit of center field in, like, emergency situations, but not somebody that's a plus defender in center field. But I think Jake Meyers kind of cracked that door open a little bit yesterday. Not to say that it should cause Chaz McCormick playing time. Just saying that maybe we shouldn't all quit the Jake Meyers experiment. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for Chad. Chad, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Chad?
Hey guys, hey, how many actual outs did Myers have before he even hit that homer? Do y'all know?
Well, he was 2-for-4 yesterday. He was 2-for-4 yesterday, 3-run homer, but he hit the homer in the first inning. So are you talking about in the season?
Yeah, it's just, there's no debate. I still don't trust him at all. It's going to take more than just one home run to turn my head. He's going to have to make up for a lot of stuff, and then he's going to have to show on top of that the consistency that Chaz actually has. So for me, it's a no-brainer. My door right now is still shut, and that's all I got to say on that.
I appreciate Thanks, the call, Chad. Yeah. Appreciate it. I like the energy there. He's not a Jake believer. And look, I probably made a mistake here. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned Chaz whenever I was mentioning Jake Myers. I do not want Jake Myers to play at the expense of Chaz McCormick's playing time. I'm just wondering if the city, because look, a lot of times we're prisoner of the moment in a lot of different sports categories, that when a player produces well, it's, love that guy. Like, how many people, I want to bet this offseason with Dr. Lemmy, still waiting for that bet, Dr. Lemmy, although he's made the steps necessary to pay me, unlike others.
Has King of Twitch?
Not that I know of.
Oh.
Not that I know of. Yeah. Dick Willie, supposed to buy me a bottle of whiskey.
Where's Richie?
Or a bottle, yeah, he has, I don't know.
I haven't seen Richie in a while.
I haven't gotten a bottle of whiskey outside of my very favorite, Gentle Ben. But, like, I'm not trying to call for Jake Myers to play more than Chaz McCormick at all. But, like, the prisoner of the moment thing, people were saying DFA Mauricio Dubon in the offseason, which is like, okay, Mauricio Dubon.
You had that conversation on the air several times.
Yeah, Mauricio Dubon's a big league player. Like, he might, coming into this year after a bad season with the Astros, he's still a big league player because he gives you plus defense at literally every position other than catcher. Last year he couldn't hit a lick. People wanted to DFA him. Now people love him. People love Mauricio Dubon. So it flips like that. When Jake Myers was called up and Jake Myers was doing well in his rookie year going into that postseason when he was producing, we were talking about Jake Myers as the future of the position in center field. And then torn labrum came out, the torn labrum, lacking confidence. Maybe he wasn't completely healthy. Who knows? Wasn't very good. After an entire offseason to get over that, started this year slow. Quite frankly, he did. But it's like we don't like Jake because we love Chaz more. And I understand that. Chaz, like you said, is a gamer, all of that. Just saying maybe we shouldn't have that door completely slammed.
Look, as long as he's a member of your organization and he's on your 40-man roster and he's going to be used by Dusty as Dusty has shown, then you shouldn't crap all over him and be done with him because obviously the organization isn't. So with that said, you still have to hold out some hope and you have to pull for him and you have to capitalize on a night like what happened last night. Not that you're going to set your expectations too high, but you can be hopeful to capitalize and say, hey, this is what kickstarts him. This is hopefully what gets him back to the Jake Myers that the organization expects him to be, that we saw glimpses of him, of before he got hurt. But unless he walks out the door and starts playing for someone else or is completely let go by the organization, you have to have an open-minded outlook on Jake Myers to say, let's just hope he finds it. Because at a certain point when healthy, he's not a starter, but there are going to be times he's counted on. There's going to be plenty of lineups he's going to be involved in, and you're going to hope that he can get over whatever obstacles he's fighting mentally and physically so that when he is called on, he can perform for you.
Yeah. I mean, you and Chad are right. He's got to do it consistently. There's no doubt about that. He's got to prove doubters wrong, and he's got to earn that, and I completely agree. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I was encouraged with Christian Javier yesterday. I was watching him very closely in his first few starts. His velocity was down. His velocity was down about 1.5 miles per hour on his fastball, which that doesn't concern me a ton. But whenever you couple the fact that his velo's down a buck and a half, and then the fact that his strikeout rate was also cut nearly in half, those two things together like catch my eye. Mm-hmm. Concerning, I wouldn't go that far early in the season, but whenever your velo's down and you're striking out about half of the hitters that you struck out last year, that catches my mind for a dude who's a strikeout pitcher. The most encouraging thing that I saw from Christian Javier yesterday, like he's getting credit for pitching well, even though he didn't have his breaking ball. That is admirable. That's very good, especially against a very tough lineup. He wasn't his best, only gave up one run over five innings against a very formidable lineup in the Blue Jays. The most encouraging thing I noticed from Christian Javier last night, the velo was ticking back up to his normal velocity, which is great, but he also struck out a hitter an inning. He had five strikeouts in five innings, so those two things it caught my eye. His velo, the strikeout rate, yesterday was back. The velo was up. The strikeouts, getting it one per inning. I like what I saw from
Javier. I'll take it a step further for you, too. What I saw, too, was as much as he started out low, which might have been the just, you know, the bullpen session getting ready, he just wasn't completely warmed up, stretched out yet. What I liked was as he threw more pitches, and I was obviously watching the pitch count going, you can't get this guy over 100 pitches this early. I know he wants to get through five. You want him to get through five. You need him to finish five. But when I looked at it, even in that last inning, popping 95 on the fastballs up and in, I'm like, that's what you want to see. Because that's more like Verlander type stuff. As you get tired or you think that your arm's supposed to be petering out, you still have their velocity up on your fastball. So once he got it, he maintained it, even as his arm was up around 90 pitches. That's super encouraging this early in the season. That's where you don't have to worry about like a tired arm syndrome going through a guy like Javier, which crossed my mind when you saw the velocity. You knew he played in the World Baseball Classic. And this is the kind of things we're watching with guys that participated and got maybe ramped up too soon. That was encouraging from Javier.
Yeah, I like that a lot from Javi. Good to see that velo up. Didn't, like they mentioned, didn't have his breaking stuff, but he still struck out a hitter in an inning, which this is a lineup that's scary, this Blue Jay lineup is. So it was a good start for Javier. Good to see that velocity back up. And I think the biggest surprise from the Astros bullpen is Phil Maton. Phil Maton has been great for the Astros this year. Look, small sample, it is early, but he's pitched an inning and a third this season, has not given up a run, and has struck out 10. Phil Maton was another player that fans were saying that the Astros should DFA in the offseason. We're sitting here like, hold on a second. Phil Maton is a dude who's not a great reliever historically, but he's a sub-4 ERA guy. Like, who would be the Astros reliever in this Phil Maton role if it wasn't Phil Maton? Seth Martinez, who hasn't been very good. Ronel Blanco, who hasn't been very good. So, like, sometimes we need to be realistic about where we are. Phil Maton has been tremendous for the Houston Astros. He's been their best reliever, and he's their, what is it? He's probably their sixth most important reliever from like a leverage standpoint.
Look at guys that you've been relying on, whether it be regular season or playoffs. I mean, look, Ryan Stanek didn't look great last night again in the ninth inning. Neris obviously had some issues, and he completely overthrew an 0-2 pitch for a grand slam, and he had a couple of hiccups already. Abreu's been as good as he was in the playoffs.
Abreu's been great.
He's still settling in, though, in terms of the things that we're talking about, in terms of, you know, not self-inflicted wounds.
1.17 ERA.
That's all you ever go to. But we know that he puts guys on base. We know that he hasn't been his pinpoint self. But
his whip is better than it was last year.
It's not a slap in the face. He's going to continue to get settled in.
I just get sensitive when you talk about
my guy. I
know you
do. Montero's the guy that got the money and I said was going to be under the microscope. And I was worried he wasn't going to be able to perform at the same level. He's had a couple of hiccups already. So and we know Ryan Pressly has too. So when you look at the bullpen, the last guy you were expecting to have to rely on or look to is Phil Maton, but Phil Maton has been really steady for you.
He's been great. He's been a revelation for Dusty Baker in the bullpen, and he's not even one of your leverage guys, so that's great to see. 2662, how you feeling today, Branham? Well rehearsed, I'd imagine. Maybe you're a little 92.5 listener. I was doing some VO work, and it went on the air. 2727, when Brantley comes back, are you leaving him on the bench and keeping Jolks at left and DH, or moving Jolks to the bench and putting Brantley in the lineup? Corey Jolks is not going to play over Michael Brantley, but the Astros have also talked about how they want to take it easy with Brantley. Like, they don't want to rush him one back, and then when he's here to play every single day. I think the natural thing to do is when Michael Brantley has an off day, Corey Jolks is the dude that's filling in for Michael Brantley, whether it's in left field or DH, whichever position Yordan Alvarez doesn't want to play that day. He also is a right-handed stick. Brantley has not been great against left-handed pitching, so it kind of makes sense that if you're trying to take it easy with Michael Brantley, then when Michael Brantley is back, assuming he comes back healthy and strong and all of that stuff, that Michael Brantley just flat-out doesn't play against left-handed pitching, and that Corey Jolks, whenever Brantley's not facing lefties, is the dude in the lineup to face lefties. So that's how I would handle it. Take Brantley, you know, take your time, Brantley. We want you back at your best. We want you back 100%. We don't need 80% Brantley or a dude that lands back on the injured list. Take your time getting back, but then once he's back, if Corey Jolks is continuing to swing a hot stick, then Corey Jolks is starting against lefties and Michael Brantley starting against righties. That's how I would do it. I would do a straight platoon.
And you know that when we talked about this earlier, I said, look, I don't care what Michael, I don't care. I know he's got incentives in his contract. I don't care if he's not ready in April. I care that he's going to be where he wasn't a year ago, which would have helped them even more so, which is in the lineup in October and when they need him most. So I understand that maybe he's not going to be, you know, getting the kind of at-bats And to your point, if you do platoon him a little bit more, he might not get the incentives, but you know what? There's a chance he stays healthier and he's more a part of this team late when you really need him. I'm good with all of that as long as you have a guy that can pick up where he left off to some degree. If Jolks keeps hitting like this, there's no problem and no one should question anything about platooning.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. But you'd have to figure something out, though. Like, if he keeps in like this and Brantley's back, one of them has to sit.
Yeah, no, right.
One of them has to sit. Well, you can't play them both.
No, I'm saying, but you can platoon them in left field, and you can actually have three-man. You're not going to sit Yordan. I mean, Yordan is going to be in the lineup every day, and he deserves to be.
Unless he doesn't want to play that day, and then he won't be in the lineup.
Unless his hands are sore.
7-1, which that's just code for he doesn't want to play
that day. Don't call him that word.
I've actually turned the corner on that.
Okay, good.
I don't think Yordan's soft. I think Yordan says when he wants to play and when he doesn't want to play.
What are the numbers on soft now? Two?
I think it's one. I think Lance is soft.
No, you also have another one.
Who?
Who did you?
I used to say Yordan was soft.
Yeah, and I graduated
from Yordan being soft to Yordan just checks out whenever Yordan wants to not play for a little bit. No, I thought it was just two.
I'll have to think about that.
I think a lot of people are soft, though. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. One guy who's not soft, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but the betting favorite for the number two pick of the NFL draft has shifted again. And for the first time ever, I really think that the Houston Texans will be drafting Will Levis. I'll explain to you why next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I don't know how you feel about this, Blankers.
Guess what?
Will Levis is going to be the next franchise quarterback for the Houston Texans. It's all starting to add up. This is the first time in my life. Like, I know I've been pro-Levis.
Have you?
Yes. This is the first time in my life that I feel that Will Levis is going to be a Houston Texan. Because as much as I've liked Levis, I've never once felt that he would land with the Houston Texans. I've never had the feeling that Will Levis would be the quarterback that the Texans draft. Okay. This is the first time where I've woken up in the morning and I said, Will Levis is going to be the next quarterback for the Houston Texans. He is going to be the pick for the Houston Texans.
Now, where would be the key question? Because...
Two.
You think they're going to take Levis? No, we had this conversation yesterday.
This is why, again, this is the first day I felt it. This is the first day there's new information.
So I was the straw that stirred this drink.
No, you weren't.
I brought it up yesterday about the fan base's reaction if they would take Levis at two.
Yeah, the fan base hates it. I posted this on Twitter. Two different questions. You would fill blank if Will Levis goes at two. You would fill blank if Anthony Richardson goes at two. And people hate Levis and would be okay with Richardson. They do not want Will Levis, trust me. I've seen it all over the internet. The reason that I've now officially feel this way, that Will Levis is going to be the next quarterback for the Houston Texans, quite honestly, it's Vegas. We were talking about this yesterday. The Vegas movement is usually the closest thing to the truth that you will find.
That's why we closed the door on Bryce Young.
Bryce Young yesterday was a minus 1,000 favorite to go number one at one site, and he was a minus 750 favorite to go at number one to some other website. Caesars yesterday updated their second pick odds on who would be the pick at number two. Will Levis is the favorite, according to Caesars, to be the pick at number two. He's a plus 180 favorite to be the second overall pick. Tyree Wilson, Will Anderson are plus 300 to be the second overall pick. So Vegas is telling you, at least Caesars are, and there's different line movement from like different sports books. Right. There's one sports book that still has Will Anderson the slight favorite over Will Levis. So multiple sports books are moving Levis closer and closer to being the pick at number two. So Vegas is telling me that this is going to happen. And then I started to think about it a little bit more as well. The Houston Texans, I want this too. I want the Houston Texans to draft a quarterback in the first round, however they do it. And I have, like, I don't love Stroud. I don't love Richardson. If they ended up drafting one of those guys at, like, 8 or 9, okay. Like, I'm not going to be too mad about that. But when you start to think about trade-down possibilities, like Lance Erline said yesterday, the Texans are shopping that pick. Okay, but if they're married to the idea of drafting quarterback in the first round of this draft, who are you trading with where you're still comfortable that you're drafting a quarterback?
Yeah.
Because even if you like, if you trade with the Colts, you can still get a quarterback there, right? Because you could trade with the Colts, have the fourth pick, you take whichever of the four quarterbacks potentially are there. But if you go any further than the fourth pick, what if you trade down with the Raiders? What if the Raiders really want C.J. Stroud? So you make the trade with the Raiders where you flip-flop 2 and 7, you get draft capital, all of that. Carolina takes Bryce Young. The Raiders take C.J. Stroud. Arizona's probably going to trade out of that pick. But even if Arizona doesn't trade out of that pick, Seattle can trade out of 5, Detroit can trade out of 6, and Indy takes a quarterback at 4. I don't see a partner where the Texans can trade down in this draft and still get quarterback. So I think the Texans are married to the idea of quarterback in this first round, not necessarily at 2, but they're starting to realize that if they trade down in this first round, they could potentially leave the first round without a quarterback, and I don't think the Texans want to do that.
I think if they want a quarterback, regardless of who it is, it has to be at 2. We talked about previously how they could use 12 and something else to sweeten the pot and go up later in the top 10. I think that was something that maybe was realistic a couple of weeks ago. I think right now the way it's all settling in, I think that if you're going to take quarterback, if you're adamant like a lot of people are and have said they have to go quarterback this year, it has to be at 2. Now, the flavor of the day could change a million times before we get to the draft day. But I believe that if they truly want a quarterback in this draft or one of the top four quarterbacks in this draft, it has to be at 2. Otherwise, you have to take Will Anderson or you have to take someone on the defensive side of the football you believe in and realize we're just going to have to be creative for this year with quarterback, with Case Keenum, and whether or not you believe in another year of Mills, you're going to have to find some other options before you get to trying to find your franchise for the long term. Because it's either 2 or bust at quarterback for me.
That's kind of the point here of like why I think that they go Levis at some, like, I think it's going to be at number 2, quite honestly. And it's the first day that I believed that Will Levis is going to be the quarterback for the Houston Texans and the pick at number 2. Because you could say, well, he's the odds on favorite to be the number 2 pick of the draft, but what if the Texans trade out of that spot? I realize that possibility exists, but if the Texans are committed to leaving the first round at a quarterback, they're not trading down past number 4. Mm-mm. And I don't think that they're likely to make a trade with the Colts, even though I'm not scared of that. Like a lot of people are scared of making trades with division rivals. I don't care. Just win the trade. You come out ahead against a division rival. It's like winning twice. They can't, even if they trade to number 5, even if they flip-flop with Seattle, no one really expects Seattle to be in the market too much for a quarterback. They might be in the market later if like Hendon Hooker falls. But even if it's Seattle, if you are the Texans and you trade from 2 down to 5, there's no guarantee there's a quarterback there because whoever's trading up for 2 is going to be trading up for a quarterback. Arizona's shopping their pick. There is a real chance that the first 4 picks of this draft are quarterback, 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 quarterback. The other clues, Vegas, I don't think
Vegas
there's a trade. The odds makers, not the Las Vegas Raiders, but the odds makers right. are telling you Will Levis is more likely to go number 2. According to Caesars, he's the favorite to go to number 2. I don't think there's a trade partner, and we're hearing more and more, like Lance Zierlein was talking about this. The defensive ends at the top of this draft, none of them are elite generational defensive ends. So, like, are you reaching on a quarterback? Are you reaching on a defensive end? Much more likely to do that with a quarterback. It'd be one thing to punt on quarterback and draft – you know, Myles Garrett. It's another thing to punt on a quarterback and take Whitney Mercilus. So there's more and more evidence to me backing up the case that Will Levis is going to be the number 2 pick of the NFL draft to the Houston Texans. And like I said, it's the first time this offseason where I felt like legitimately sure.
Giddy?
I don't know if I want to go giddy yet because it's more of like uneasiness at this point.
You've been the most outspoken of anybody that I've seen or heard from.
Today is the first day I believe it's going to happen.
And I know that you've also always set the precursor. Look, I want Bryce Young, and we know that now Bryce Young, for all intent and purposes, is off the board. So, it rightfully so, he just has to perform now if you get your guy. My thing is, aside from everything that you said, is don't sleep on Seattle not only keeping that pick, but possibly taking an Anthony Richardson-type player because they know Geno Smith isn't there long-term.
I could see
that. And they know that for as bad as Geno Smith was for the majority of his career, he found the fountain of youth for 1 year, and they paid him for it. But they also realized he could go back to being the old Geno Smith at any time, like the clock strikes midnight, and you don't have any – but now while Geno is still kind of finding that prime for a year or two,
uh-huh.
Richardson, we've said, needs seasoning – But then all of a sudden, by the time they're Geno's ready to be pushed off into the sunset, here's your guy waiting, and you carry the torch.
Richardson could be to Geno what Mahomes was to Smith.
No question.
Where, like, you have this playoff-caliber team. You have a quarterback that's, like, solid but not quite good enough to reach the mountaintop. You're willing to allow that rookie quarterback to sit for a year. But that even furthers the point.
Sure,
like,
it does.
If either you trade down to number five with Seattle goes up to number two to take Anthony Richardson. That takes you out of the quarterback sweepstakes. Or if you trade down with the Raiders at seven, or you're not probably trading with the Lions because I don't think the Lions would trade up for a quarterback. But if you fall down to number seven, the Raiders are moving up to number two to take quarterback. So Carolina's taking quarterback. Raiders are taking quarterback. Even if Arizona stays at number three, they take Will Anderson. The Colts are taking quarterback. Seattle's taking quarterback. So you're sitting there at number seven. You've missed out on quarterbacks. So I don't think that the Texans can trade down and still get a quarterback in the first round. Vegas is telling me that Will Levis is more likely to go to number two. We've heard reports that the Houston Texans are not enamored with C.J. Stroud and that Will Levis is quarterback number two on their board potentially. There is not a stud defensive player in this draft, according to multiple people, including our very own Lance Zierlein, that a Will Anderson, that a Tyree Wilson are more likely, like in a normal draft, being closer to the 10th pick than the first pick. The best defensive player in this draft, quite frankly, is Jalen Carter. But Jalen Carter has huge red flags.
Yep.
I believe for the first time that Will Levis is going to be the Houston Texans selection at two. I will also say it with the, like, conceding the point that it's a reach, because I don't think most people will have Will Levis. Like, Will Levis is over under right now in Vegas is 6.5. You take Will Levis at two when his over under is 6.5, it's a bit of a reach. I'll concede that. I want to ask y'all the question on the other side. Ask this to the Hive as well, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. Would you rather the Texans reach and take Levis at number two or leave the first round altogether without a quarterback? 713-780-3776, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now I'll tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I go every Friday. I love the people there. They take good care of their patients, and they care about your well-being. So they ask you, how are you feeling? How's everything going? Are you struggling with something that we need to be aware of? If you're still not having enough energy to get through your day. If you aren't recovered quick enough after going to the gym and you're sore and you're lethargic. If you're doubting whether the workout program is working because you're not seeing the gains in the weight room, they can help you with all those things and so much more because they have so many different services that are tailor-made just for you. Go to ApolloMH.com right now and see for both men and women how they can help you. Both men and women are in the lobby every time I'm in there, and they're excited about the results they're getting, finding more energy on a daily basis, thanks to all the different ways that they can get it at Apollo Men's Health. It could be as easy as a B12 shot every single week like I get, or you can take it to the next level and do hormone therapy, which can get you more consistent energy on a day-to-day basis. And all the different ways they can administer it, or you can administer at home, and the ways that you can reap the benefits. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. If you want to see those gains by checking your numbers, do a full body composition analysis every 6 weeks or so. It'll show you that your muscle mass is up, your weight loss is down, your body fat number is down. All the key numbers will tell you what you need to know, and it'll give you more encouragement to get back in the gym. They're fantastic people. They make a difference on a daily basis. They now have FDA-approved ways, too, where you can lose up to 6 pounds a week, and it's all right there on the table for you to understand. It's approved, and it's a way that you can lose weight, too. Check them out. They have all the different solutions to all the different issues. They're good people doing great things. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
For the first time in my life, I believe that Will Levis is going to be a Houston Texan. Asking you the question, would you rather the Texans reach and take Levis at number two, make sure they get a quarterback? Because there's a lot of people are like, you have to draft quarterback at two. Most people say you have to draft quarterback at two. To optimize that pick and how important quarterback is, you need quarterback at two. And I know that this is a tough question for most of you. I do realize that. I know my stance on Levis is a bit different, but I do understand that this is a difficult question for all of you. Would you rather the Texans reach and take Levis at 2 or leave the first round altogether without a quarterback?
I'm going to say Levis at 2. And I'm going to say that simply because of the fact that...
Join me.
Yeah, I just believe that, again, in their heart of hearts and in their gut, they got to be sold on one guy. If you're not sold on a certain guy, no matter what, if Stroud is the guy that everybody says is the clear-cut number two, but you just don't feel it, then you can't do it because you have to be behind this quarterback for the entire season and hopefully more. You have to be able to feel in your heart of hearts, I got my guy. And this is what I saw that maybe some of you were missing, sleeping on, didn't really see or factor in. But I believe in this guy. Because the last thing you want to do if you're Nick Caserio is take a guy that you aren't 100% behind and then realize that failures along the way, it's going to be hard for you to support. That's why I think, and also because how about what the dire desperation of need is for this organization with quarterback, they have to go with whoever they feel at 2 at quarterback, in my opinion. Now, you may, again, be in this same scenario a year from now if the quarterback doesn't, but we saw that with Davis Mills.
I think that's the case no matter who. Like, if the whoever you draft a quarterback at 2, whether it's Levis, whether it's Stroud, whether it's Richardson, if they fail spectacularly, you're probably going to be in the quarterback market next year anyways.
You know what, Jeremy? I'm going to take a step further. I'm going to tell you right now that even if they play remotely well in their first year, if they're sitting where they were a year right now, a year from now, and another one of these two top, you know, all-world-looking quarterbacks are there, I think they're still going to have to consider one of those two guys because of the landscape of the AFC, because of the guys that you have to be as good or better than on a consistent basis in the playoffs and how young they are.
Uh-huh.
I think that you would still have a market for whoever you choose to move on from, especially if that quarterback played decently in their first year. But I think that if Caleb Williams is staring you in the face and you know that this dude looks like he's the guy, no matter how good – how high a draft pick you used and how good that player was a year for you, and now you still have options with both of those guys and you still have to consider making that pick.
It could be like the Bears situation, but on steroids, where they have Justin Fields, they could take Bryce Young, and they made the decision very early that, okay, we're just going to, you know, see what we can do with Fields, kick the can down the road, collect draft capital. The Texans could be looking at that same thing. But this year, would you rather the Texans reach? I'll concede it's a reach. I'll concede that it's a reach to take Will Levis at number 2. But would you rather have Levis at 2 or leave the first round entirely without a quarterback? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. Let's go out there for Andy. Andy, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Andy?
Hey, one thing I don't agree with when you said if you pick a number 2 and he doesn't play good, you might be in the quarterback market the next year. You know, look at Hurts. Hurts didn't blow it up the first year. He definitely didn't. He didn't blow it up the second year. He blew it out the third year when they got players around him. They went out and got Brown from Tennessee, a number one receiver. And I mean, look at Daniel Jones. And look, I'm still not sold on Daniel Jones, but look at what they did when they got an offense in there and a new head coach. And look at him. Hey, you're making $40 million plus a year now. So you can't just get a quarterback, especially in the first round, at number 2, and if he doesn't have a decent year the first year, you can't run away from him. You got to build around him and give him time. It's the hardest position to play in sports. The hardest position.
And as far as
the first round, if you're not totally in love with a quarterback, you don't pick him in the first round.
Appreciate the call, Andy. Look, I've said that. I agree with you there. But I think that what you have to do, to the things that he was saying, I don't necessarily agree with all of that because I believe that you can pick a quarterback next year because you have to see so much in that quarterback in year one that it convinces you that they're not only going to be good, Dak Prescott is good, but you need someone that's better than good and closer to great because of who you have to compete against in this conference for the next 7 years. And therefore, it's not like the Cardinals who took Josh Rosen and realized he was such a dud that you had to get half the value to get rid of him to take another quarterback the next year. I think that whoever you take this year should still have some value more than that next year. But it shouldn't preclude you from saying, you know what, we can get a better quarterback next year in the draft.
I kind of agree with both of you. Like, Andy's point is, I think, accurate. Like, you certainly have to help out the quarterback. I think I think a lot of times the situation matters far more than the quarterback talent matters. You get into the right situation, I think a lot of people can succeed. Let's use the Chiefs as an example. Like, rookie quarterbacks that got drafted into Andy Reid's system, and then all of a sudden you have the talent and then the genius of Andy Reid, a lot of quarterbacks are going to have success. Not necessarily the success that Pat Mahomes has had and is going to have and probably going to be the greatest quarterback of all time. But look at the list of quarterbacks that have had tremendous amount of success with Andy Reid. Whether it was Alex Smith playing at a high level, best football he's ever played in his career. Whether it was Mike Vick after the whole dog stuff playing at a near MVP level in Philadelphia as well. He got Kevin Cobb, go Cougs, paid as well. So, like, situation matters a ton. Talent around the quarterback matters a ton. Quarterback is very much a dependent variable. It's the same argument we have with, like, them in college. Well, C.J. Stroud has better numbers than Will Levis. Of course he does. He's at Ohio State with elite talent, and Will Levis is in the SEC with subpar talent. His numbers better be better because the quarterback position is not an independent variable. It's not a dude in the batter's box facing a pitcher and looking at results that way. It is very much dependent on what your offensive line does, what your skill position players do, what the defense that is opposing you does to those guys as well. Now, where I agree with you is, like, you can tell incompetence pretty early. The best example you can look at is David Culley with the Houston Texans. The Texans didn't want to fire David Culley after a year. They wanted David Culley to be here for 2 years, fire him, hire DeMeco. But Culley was incompetent. They could not hang their hat on David Culley a second year, so they promoted a coach from within and kept the entire coaching staff together because they uncovered incompetence. Same thing with Josh Rosen. What has Josh Rosen done since he's left Arizona? They knew in a year that he was incompetent. Mm-hmm. So I agree with both of you here. I know that I'm, like, walking the line and sitting right on the fence. But if a quarterback has, like, Peyton Manning was terrible as a rookie. A quarterback that shows you promise, you stick with him. I agree with Andy. But a quarterback that shows you incompetence and you can't win with that guy, you move on.
But if he shows promise, at what level? What's the ceiling, right? Then you have to start analyzing what's the ceiling. Because on the Arizona argument, the reason why you could have backlash at Arizona is they just didn't do enough due diligence to figure out this guy didn't have nearly what, you know, what his college career showed.
Plus, guys are just some bust. People. Guys are just bust.
No doubt. And especially at the quarterback position. Like, to his point, the caller's point, it is the toughest position to analyze and get right sometimes because it's the most important. And sometimes you just swing and you miss as much as you think you got it right. But that shouldn't preclude you from looking at it going, yeah, we see potential and promise with this kid after 1 year, but can he be what we need him to be for the foreseeable future? And if the answer is no, or you're even questioning it, then you, if one that really does have that kind of potential is staring you in the face and you can draft them, I think you've got to really strongly consider that.
Yeah, I think it's a conversation for a later date, to be honest, because it's probably a year away. Because right now we're 9 days away from the draft. We're 9 days away from the Texans being on. Look, I understand it's a possibility, like a possibility and a plausibility. Absolutely. You could, and it's any of these quarterbacks. It's not only Levis. You could draft Anthony Richardson and he's Jamarcus Russell. You could draft C.J. Stroud and he's Josh Rosen. So, like, it applies for all the quarterbacks, quite frankly. Yeah. It could be Bryce Young and he breaks his leg in half and he's too small.
This is the Davis Mills situation all over again, only with more on the line. Because now, instead of a third-round pick that whether he pans out or not, really it's a crapshoot that you're willing to take a roll of the dice on. Mm-hmm. But if you take a first-round pick as the second overall pick, now there's more on the line because now you're talking about everybody saying you wasted a pick. And so that's why the stakes get raised. It's the same situation. You want to put the best weapons around them. You want to give them every chance to succeed. But you also realize you've got more invested than you had in Davis Mills.
No doubt. The price of poker goes way up when you're talking about quarterback at number two versus a quarterback drafted in the third. 713-780-ESPN. I'll concede to you that Levis at two is a reach. But I'm asking you the hard questions. What are we doing? It's like 60 minutes with the Killer Bees, like Dateline with the Killer Bees. You can have Will Levis at two. You reach for Levis at two, or you leave the first round without a quarterback entirely. It's a tough question because people don't want Levis. He's 4 of 4 of the quarterbacks, pretty much like the popular opinion in the city. But people also want a quarterback. So Levis at two or no quarterback at all. Which side are you on? 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to some of your calls. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.